This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week, we are brought to you again by our friends of the Magic Word, and we appreciate each and every one of those who have either donated or pledged any amount for a monthly basis, so this way that we can continue to keep this podcast going well into the future. It helps to defray a lot of our expenses, plus allows us to attend conventions. And the friends we'd like to identify this week who have just recently joined are Gary Meyer, Jake Austin, and RC Way Family Entertainment. Thank you guys very much for your pledges and your donations. If you'd like to know what the difference is between the two, well, go to themagicwordpodcast.com and you can click on a tab there and find out how that you can actually enjoy some of the perks of being a member of the Friends of the Magic Word and different giving levels, whether, again, that you're going to be giving a one-time donation or whether that you're going to be giving an ongoing monthly pledge. So all of those are certainly helpful in helping to keep this podcast going. So, again, thank you, everyone, and thank you, Gary, Jake, and RC Way Family Entertainment, for being our newest Friends of the Magic Word. And I also want to thank you, even if you have not become a member, but just come back week after week, and by helping to pledge your undying love and support for this podcast by listening to us each week, then that is greatly appreciated also, particularly if you share this on your social media. And if you're not, then I would greatly appreciate that if you would also, once that you see that this has been posted on Facebook or on Instagram, Twitter, wherever, if you would help share that as well so that other people who may not know about the podcast can be enlightened then as well. And if you're not a member of our pod letter, that's another thing. All you have to do is go over to themagicwordpodcast.com and you will see how that you can subscribe to our weekly pod letter, and that way you keep up to date as to who we're going to be talking with from week to week and who's going to be coming up next week, some suggestions from the archives and that kind of a thing. But it's just, again, a weekly newsletter, nothing that's going to be too long, lengthy, not too long. So this way you're going to be able to easily digest this, and in just a few moments you'll be able to see what's happening with the Magic Word. So again, thank you guys very much for all of your support. And if you cannot pledge anything on a donation to the podcast, you can help us by going to iTunes, if you're an Apple user, and just going into the store there where you can then give us a 5-star review with some comments if you like the podcast. If you can't and don't have the time, I understand, but as long as you got the time while you're listening, you might kind of go over and give us some love and tell us what you think about the podcast. And of course, at the bottom of every one of those blogs that is on the magicwordpodcast.com, there you will see where you can actually leave a comment. So many people have been starting to do that, and I just wanted to bring that up. So this is another way of how that you can kind of start a dialogue. Of course, you can always go over to the Facebook page for the Magic Word Podcast and continue on a dialogue there as well. Plus, again, if on the Magic Genie Forum, on the Magic Cafe, other places like that, you can find us then as well and kind of join the conversation there too. Also, I want to welcome our new sponsor this week. That is the Magic Bookshop. And the Magic Bookshop is run by Eric Citron, and he has had a couple of businesses in the past which have been not brick and mortar, but they've actually been online magic shops, and that's really kind of a difficult thing to do. You know, as we've talked about many times here on the podcast about how brick and mortar magic shops kind of have come and now are going or have gone, there are very few that are still remaining compared to the numbers that they used to have. And the problem is, I believe, just that they have a lot of competition, obviously, from the online shops. And so the online shops have proliferated such that it is difficult to try to make any kind of a mark really there, unless that you're really gotten in on the beginning or have a good, strong following. Nevertheless, what he has decided is to kind of migrate over into something that is a little bit more of a niche area, and that is for classic magic books. That's out of print books. Those are rare, hard to find. Oftentimes, they may be signed editions, could be first editions, first edition copies, some that may have been owned by other famous magicians, some that have been signed by, their authors, or perhaps signed over to somebody else as part of someone else's collection. Nevertheless, that if you're looking for a book that you can't find anyplace else, you might go to the Magic bookshop.com and see if you can locate it there. And let me also say that Eric has kindly and graciously given a 10%, or rather he will give a 10% discount on all orders. If you'll just put in the code, the promo code, Magic Word. That's all one word, Magic Word. And when you put that in, when you check out, then you will receive a 10% discount just because that you are listening here to the Magic Word podcast. You don't have to be a friend of the Magic Word or anything. Let me also say that he runs some fairly regular contests over there in which that he's giving away books and lecture notes and everything, or a great steeply discounted pricing on certain books. And he's got just stacks and stacks of books. He's always looking for new book collections. So if you're looking to get rid of your collection, then you might want to give Eric, drop him a line. If you'll just go to themagicbookshop.com and click on the contact, you'll see his contact information and you can get hold of him and try and work out a deal. I, again, know that if you're looking for some of the newer books, you'll probably find those just about any place. But if you're trying to find something that is more rare and hard to find, then this is the place to go. So thank you, Eric, for supporting the Magic Word podcast. And he has supported us on and off again throughout the years. And it's good to have him back in a new and improved form, which is kind of funny because instead of it is new, but it's old. It's new. Anyhow, you get the idea. It's old books. So go and check it out. So this week we are going to be talking with someone who is from the United Kingdom, Mr. Jamie Allen. Jamie was visiting here in Houston. Actually, I say visiting. He was actually performing here in Houston at the Hobby Center downtown. And for about a week, he had shows between Christmas and New Year's of 2019. And so I had an opportunity to go and see the show. And then afterwards, we went out for some drinks with several other magicians. And then the next day, I went into a dressing room and we spent a little bit of time chatting about magic and particularly in illusions. Now, I don't have an opportunity really to talk much with many illusionists. I have had a few people in the past I've spoken to, but there are just not a lot of illusionists out there. Most guys seems like are either in mentalism or in close-up or collectors or one thing or another. At least those have been the ones that I have been talking to. So this is a little bit unusual, but even more unusual is the kind of unique niche that Jamie has found. He calls himself the eye magician, like I guess, like internet, or the high-tech Houdini, meaning that he is really on the cutting edge of technology. You know, that's something that magicians tend to do, is that we like to try to find out what is the newest, before the rest of the audience kind of knows what's happening. And that's part of the problem with technology, is that it evolves and moves so quickly that it may fool people once, but kind of the second time may be a little bit more difficult because they can find some solutions to some of the ideas, which means that in this case that Jamie is going to have to keep ahead of that curve in order to keep fooling them all the time. Well, he has a lot of really great ideas and a very fast-paced show, and one that I highly recommend if you ever get an opportunity to see him. Again, he mostly works overseas and in the UK, but occasionally comes over to the US. I know he's worked in Chicago as well as here in Houston, and hopes to perhaps have something maybe in Vegas sometime. Well, you'll get to hear a lot of what he has to say. I don't want to take too much more of your time, but it was a rather short conversation that we had in comparison with some of the other more lengthy episodes in the past, so that's why I thought I'd take a little bit of time up front to give you a little bit of kind of what's been going on. I didn't have a chance to go to Blackpool this year, although I intend to go next year in 2021. That's going to be a pretty busy year because that also includes FISM, which is going to be up in Quebec, Canada. So I plan to do that and probably even go over to Oktoberfest, which has nothing to do with magic, but I can run into some of my friends like Dennis Baer and some of the other guys over there, maybe Thomas Fraps and some of the other fellas that I'd love to have an opportunity to visit while I'm over in Germany. So next year could be a pretty busy year as far as international travel for the Magic Word podcast, and so you'll be coming along with me, but that's still a year away. And so again, I didn't travel to England here this year, but England came to Houston to visit us, and so you'll get the benefit of hearing our conversation right now. So please welcome my guest, Mr. Jamie Allen, the Eye Magician, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com. And we are in Houston today, which is my hometown. And I broadcast a lot, quite frequently from Houston. But I have a guest visitor who came into Houston who was doing five nights of a show here in downtown at the Hobby Center. And he is from England and known as the Eye Magician or the High Tech Houdini. Please welcome my guest, Mr. Jamie Allen. Hey, Jamie.
Thank you, Scott. Yeah, I'm really excited about this. You know, I'm an American podcast. I feel like I've really made it now.
There you go. Yeah. Well, I guess I'd feel the same way if I could, you know, have one from another country that they
Well, you know, maybe you would do. We were talking about this yesterday with the Magic Circle and everything and, you know, our allegiance. You know, we've got, I feel we've got a close allegiance, America and English magicians. Don't they? That Magic Society, they're very closely linked.
Right. Yeah, they are. And in fact, some years ago, many years ago, and I talked with the president some years ago, and he had said, Scott Penrose, I believe it was the president.
Yeah,
at the
Scott's
time.
Just the outgoing president now. Noel Britton is in now. Yeah.
And so I was talking with Scott about, not them necessarily sponsoring, but I thought, you know, each week what I could do is just kind of say, you let me know who's going to be coming in, you know, this week to, perform or going to be lecturing or, you know, what's going to be on the evening show on Monday.
Yeah.
And that way that I can kind of help promote the Magic Circle. He said, let me get back to you. And I think that's when they actually went this other direction. They started sponsoring the Magician's Podcast.
They did sponsor that. Yeah. Yeah. And they also started streaming the lectures and everything now.
That is fantastic.
Which is great. And it's great for the overseas members because they finally get to feel like they're part of that community.
I really do. It's exactly right. And in fact, that I have learned some stuff and put into my act.
Yeah.
Things
yeah.
that I have learned from the lecture.
It's probably one of the most valuable societies you can join now that they're doing that, because really for the membership fee, it's worth it alone just to have those lectures streamed.
On a weekly basis.
On a weekly basis. It's an incredible amount of, an incredible library they're amassing.
And they're archived.
Yeah.
So that you can go back and watch whatever for the past year or whenever.
Yeah. It's a really remarkable thing just for those members.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, I think that is just,
anyway, I feel we've promoted the Magic Circle enough.
Mm-hmm. Yes. There we go.
Go join.
They should. So anyhow, so you have not really performed, I know in Houston, but you have been in the U.S. You said you were in Chicago last year?
Yeah, we did a run at the Harris Theater in Chicago last Christmas, and that was our first proper run of shows. I mean, I've performed in the U.S. sporadically across my career on random shows in corporates, but not ticketed shows.
Okay.
Because in the U.K., we were doing the show as a ticketed show. For 3 years, we did the show touring the U.K.,
and that was after you had already done some cruise ships, is that right?
Yeah, I used to do. I still do some ships for Royal Caribbean in the summertime because I love Royal Caribbean. They're just they're really great company to work for. And but I used to be a full-time cruise magician back in the day.
Right.
I think it's sad that some people kind of snub it a bit. In America, they seem to like it more. They're more respected by it. In UK, there are some magicians that won't admit to doing it, or they try to hide the fact they've been on it as if it's somehow a slight. And that I think came from Simon Cowell. Had a big run on Britain's Got Talent for years, saying he compared all the bad acts to cruise ship performers.
Really?
He said, you like a cruise ship performer.
Did he think the cruise ship guys were hacks or something?
He did. Or he didn't know. He just used it as an analogy. And then as a result, that became a stigma.
So for the public thinking that's what we should expect.
Yeah. It's the worst performers are on cruise ships, or actually the reverse is true.
That's true.
The very best. Well, that's where Variety and Vaudeville is now. Mm-hmm. That's it. Is the touring circuit in the UK certainly is gone, and it's all on ships.
About that, I always like to ask people from the UK whenever that they're on the podcast about the way they used to have the conservative club. What are the clubs?
Working men's clubs.
Yeah, I know those are a thing that way past.
Way past. Well, they're still going, and they're still a thing. And there's a lot of people that work those. I've never gone down that road. I kind of left. I mean, I started off doing a holiday park, which is obviously a thing in the UK. I don't know if they really
like
have
like
that.
Blackpool kind of a place.
Yeah, but these places where people all used to go to one large community,
like
where
Tivoli Gardens, kind of thing.
That's something where they'd build they had a theater there, and they have restaurants, and it can be all inclusive or not, and people come and they rent rooms like a big hotel, really. And they have red coat entertainers that are like the resident entertainers that would come in and that would perform their own speciality skills, sometimes a magician. And also they'd hire people to come in and perform on a nightly basis. That still goes on, and that's a busy circuit. And I started off doing that when I was 16. I was like a resident entertainer. I used to call bingo and do do my magic show on a Wednesday and a Saturday. And But I was as happy as I could be because I was a professional magician in my mind.
That's right, you were being paid to do magic, and you had to do this bingo thing on the side.
Yeah, and then the next year I went to do the same thing, but I was a touring cabaret for them. So I remember I used to get £100 a night.
Wow.
Driving the length of the country every day. And it seemed like somebody had taken a map and just zigzagged lines as in the furthest possible direction they could each day. And I think I spent about a third of my wage on petrol, about a third of my wage on accommodation eating. And I think I probably came out with about 15 or 10 pounds.
So you're saying £100 for the night, not per show?
No, which is one show.
Oh, just one show to get up there and
so
back.
It gotcha. Sounded okay. I mean, this is going back now, you know, 25 years.
Right.
So, I mean, that would be worth a little more now.
Right.
But it wasn't great money, but it was great experience.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'd always heard Paul Daniels talk about.
Yeah. You've got to pay your dues. You know, you have to expect not to make any great money when you're young. And if you just, well, I mean, obviously there's exceptions to that and people, you know, in different ways get lucky. But generally, if you're trying to build a career as a working professional, I think you've got to go through all those steps and also learn how to handle yourself in any situation for good and bad audiences.
Speaking of which, like with Dynamo, I do not know him personally and nor really much about his background. Did he kind of come out of nowhere or did he pay his dues and have to do a lot of those kinds of shows?
He did a lot of close-up work. In no doubt, I'm sure if we asked him, I don't know Stephen personally, but I imagine that I've met him on a couple of occasions and he seems like a really nice guy every time I've met him. And I've seen I saw his show recently in London. He did a different kind of show. He's still doing the big tours, but he did a different kind of show in a small venue in a hotel in London. We did a string of shows and it only seated about 150. It was a more expensive ticket price and a really intimate experience. And it was really good. And we really enjoyed that. It was a whole different side to him. And I think it was something I'd like to see more of him doing because it was a really nice to be engaged. And it felt like probably with his background as well as a close-up magician that it was a really nice experience in that room. And as I think it will be with any performer, like parlor-style magic, it's probably the best way to see magic.
I was about to say that very thing, that I enjoy the smaller room, certainly. And the room you're playing here in Houston is a 450-seat theater, you
said. It's either 450 or 500 or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's a small room, and you saw it last night. It's a great room for magic.
It is.
I mean, last year at Christmas, we were in a behemoth of a room that was like 1,500 seats at Chicago.
Wow.
And although that sounds great, and I suppose it
sounds like a big cave.
it was a big, big space to fill. And thankfully, I'm a big guy and I've always been used to working on theatre stages.
So six three?
Yeah, I'm 6'4", but I'm able to fill it, but it's not as fun. I mean, this is the perfect size room for this show we're doing.
You almost feel as if that you can touch each person. I mean, you can see their eyes.
You can.
As opposed to kind of scanning 1,000 people in the audience.
Yeah. I mean, the way we try to run it is we run iMagician as a very modular production. So we can upscale it, downscale it. There's a lot of things that are always in it. But then there's a few larger pieces that come in or out depending on, you know, things like the projection screen size.
Right.
You know, that gets bigger in a bigger theater. It gets smaller and smaller. The amount of lights we put out. I think we put most of our lights up though here. And, you know, like the illusions, like the big levitation and those things we haven't done here.
You got a double levitation, but.
Yeah, there's one right here on the dock, but it's not in the show at the moment.
It's not because, the theater stage is too small to accommodate that.
You could get it in here, but it's also a crewing issue as well. We have to, you know, we have to be mindful of the size of the venue and how many people we bring. And it's all logistics because, I mean, it's very easy to sit in a theater and add up all the ticket prices and go, oh, this must be making money or not. But, you know, but the reality of it is, you know, with the shipping and the promotion and everything else, it's a huge undertaking. Not all my undertaking. We have a lucky to have a promoter that does it because when we're in the UK, we promote our own show.
Sure.
But we don't know the market here. We wouldn't know how to do it. So.
Well, as I said, you're kind of just getting started. I mean, you did the show in Chicago then last year and this one here, and hopefully that you'll come back to Houston each Christmas and maybe.
Yeah, I'm hoping to do more and more now. I mean, we've got a few offers. We couldn't do, after the Chicago run, we got offered a bunch of casinos and some performing arts centers, but we couldn't commit to any of them because I was already booked through till this Christmas.
Right.
At that time. So now we're looking to stage a tour in the U.S. That would be fun.
And so with that, I assume there's some major cities. I mean, Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah. And sort of split weeks. And we might do some one-nighters with a certain version of the show and then some where we hang around for three or 4 days. Maybe longer in the odd the odd city.
So was this four-walled that you did for this one? Or how was this arranged?
This is a co-pro with the theater, actually.
Okay.
The theater's produced it with us. Mm-hmm. On this occasion. Like last year in Chicago, it was a four-wall.
Okay.
Most of the time in our business, it's a four-wall, let's be honest.
Someone had asked me last evening about that, and I said, you know, I think it is, but I also knew you had a promoter who was working with you, so it's a co-pro thing.
Yeah, it's a co-pro with our promoter and the Hobby Center here.
Okay.
And they have produced the show, and they've done a really good job. We were up against it this year because we went on sale really kind of late for this one, because we were going to be doing another venue, but then that got moved to the summer. And all of a sudden, we found ourselves without a home for Christmas. And the Hobby Center very kindly invited us here, and our promoter managed to arrange it. But as a result, we were only on sale about 3 weeks before we came.
Wow.
So we're really pleased at the interest that we have had. And how
just a short amount of time.
Yeah, in a short amount of time. I mean, you want to have a show, a three-month lead time on a show to sell. And it's tough when it's this close. But we've had a blast. I mean, it's been really great. And the ticket sales have really picked up towards the end now. That always happens when you get into a place because they start to tell their friends.
Yeah, word of mouth.
Yeah, and that makes a big difference. So I think from my point of view as a business model, I'd rather be in somewhere that's smaller for longer and let it build than try and spend a lot of money to sell tickets ahead of time on a larger capacity venue, which I don't frankly enjoy performing in as much.
Mm-hmm. Like we were just talking about having something that's much more intimate. You can kind of be more one-on-one in a way, you know, even though you have an overhead screen for some of your close-up things that you're doing, you know, then as well. Do you feel that you're kind of getting away from the intimacy of that whenever you do go to an overhead screen? Or do you feel that everybody's
I think it's good if you've got a mix of it. And I think it's important to engage the audience whenever you can. You'll notice the things that I do one piece, which is to music, when I have no interaction with the audience, but that's only 3 minutes and that's done on the screen.
Oh, the Shape of Your Heart?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I do with, I should probably say what you say that because obviously there was a few different versions of that over the years, but mine has been
I know Sean Farquhar you weren't the one that had the controversy with him.
No, that was my friend Russ Stevens.
Okay. He was from England too, is that right?
Russ is from England. Russ.
Because I was thinking, stepping into here?
No, there's nothing to step into, but I always like to clarify it.
Okay, please
when
do.
It's mentioned. the story with The Shape of My Heart was that my mom bought the CD when it came out, and she brought it to me and said, oh, this is a fantastic song, as I believe any magician that heard that song would.
Everybody did immediately.
You would have to be the worst magician in the world to not hear how good that song is for for a magic trick.
Right.
And so I started to play around with it. I was very young then. And then Russ came on the TV 2 weeks later, and he did a car manipulation routine to it. Yeah, that's exactly what I thought.
Yeah.
And Russ was like my idol when I was a kid. I mean, I looked up to him so much. I still do. He's he's a good friend of mine now. But then a couple of years went by, and I was dealing with Russ on something else, and I showed him what I'd been working on.
Yeah.
And he said, well, that's completely different to mine. And he gave me his blessing to do
that's
it.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
So I know there's some controversy, and I don't even want to speak about that.
Right.
But that's a long time in the past.
Hopefully, you all kissed and made up.
Everybody's friends, and that's a long way. But there's no point dragging any of that up. But I was never involved myself in that because it was just kind of removed from me. But my routine is this table routine. I will say that Sean's was an in-hands routine. Russ's was a manipulation routine. Mine was a tabled routine based around originally McDonald's Aces. You'll have seen I've made some changes to that, and I use a projection mapping with it.
Explain that, because I really want to get into the eye magician kind of a thing about when people, you know, in high tech and all this kind of stuff, because what you're doing is far beyond what I think anyone else is doing, very original stuff, and also about how that it changes and the technology changes, and you have that, a lot of things to talk about, but talk about that mapping and how
that works. So The Shape of My Heart, I use projectors that hit the table surface to create a graphical display on the mat. Some of it is live action and actually reacts to my hands, and some of it is pre-record that goes with the track. And it means that when I'm dealing down, say I'm producing the Ace of Hearts, then hearts fly from the
cards. Look like they're exploding or something.
As I'm producing them. And it looks very beautiful, but it's difficult to get it the balance right where they can still clearly follow the trick and the graphic doesn't become overwhelming.
Distracting.
Yeah, but it's like... It's like watching more. It makes it more artistic, and I set that up saying, you know, this is not really a thing about fooling you. It's more of a piece of performance art.
Art, right?
Yeah, and from that point of view, it works really well. I don't think you could produce an entire show of that kind of thing, but as a one-off thing, it's really interesting, and they can also sense there is some what they perceive as real skill behind it.
Mm-hmm.
at the same time. So I think that makes a difference to them.
And also that you do explain that this is real skill, sleight of hand, and this is not trick photography, although you see these aces because people are thinking, wait a minute, this has already been pre-recorded or something like
that. Yeah, I say exactly that. Yeah. I try to hit a couple of the things they think it might be and try to explain the technology. And I like them to leave my show feeling that they've learned something. So we give them a few little factoids about history of magic.
Love that.
And a few things about the technology and sort of let them peek behind the curtain and explain a couple of things, how they might work, but then still fool them.
Right, ultimately. Right. You could explain that, but then hit them with another, where they don't see it's coming.
Find a little surprise.
But again, where that on television, they're always saying, you know, that this is performed before a live audience, you know, it's no trick photography or anything. But when you're saying to begin with that you're the eye magician, you know, like an iPad or an eye.
I'm inviting that criticism.
Yes, you are. Right.
But I'm also, because I'm doing a ticketed show, I'm also, people that are coming are slightly more interested in that.
That's a good point. You have a little bit higher sophisticated audience who carries iPhones and familiar with technology.
Yeah, and they some of the things, I mean, I'm doing this new thing with augmented reality at the moment, which is new in the show right now, and that's a tough one to sell. And I'm just finding its feet now, and it's been going... It's been going down better the last 3 days than when we opened.
You think the scripting is getting tighter? And
it's starting to find the way to sell it because it's one thing. I mean, we spent hundreds of hours trying to get the technology to work. And actually, last night, it was lagging. It was a tough one. We fixed it today. But we're using like live tracking on the objects so that it's creating an augmented reality effect. I mean, I'll save what it actually is for the show if anybody sees it. But suffice to say that I'm using augmented reality to make an object change and then stay that way permanently. That's then given away, and it's a really nice effect. But they're watching like a movie effect and then trying to explain, no, it's actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it really helps if the volunteer you have is good. If they react to it,
exactly right.
The audience reacts to it.
Well, I think that's the same like with any trick, particularly that the audience, because it could have been any one of them that was selected, but once they get up there, it's the reaction of that person who is the everyman, if you will.
Well, sometimes people seem excited in the audience and you think, you know, there's probably books and books to be written on how to select audience members, but generally it just comes from experience, doesn't it? And then you still get it wrong.
I ask so many of my guests. In fact, I just had one with Nathan Comarsh, and we had a long discussion about selection of volunteers and how you decide. And I've talked with Kerry Pollack, so many different people about, you know, looking at the audience and seeing their eyes. Are they enjoying it? Are they looking away? They look at their phone or whatever. How do you engage and get the right person? I noticed that last evening, like when you're throwing a brick out, you know, the phone brick out in the audience in order to select a volunteer, you really never know who you're going to get. That way, because it's not selected by you, because of course you're looking for a random person anyhow.
In that case, it's okay because you just asked them to make a selection
for that particular trick.
But when you want to bring somebody onto the stage, you really want to look into their eyes and sense. And I try to look at them first and make a decision. I'll often walk past them and go back to them, thinking, "Do they look like the right person?" Mm-hmm. But I still get it wrong.
Well, we all do, you know.
I get it right more than I get it wrong.
Well, it comes with experience, you know, obviously, you know, then too.
I'll say one thing, which is of interest maybe to your listeners. I've found that recent years I've started saying, who would like to help me? Please raise your hands. And there's lots of people that do actually want to come and will raise their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can see the ones that might be too excited.
You don't want those. Yeah, or someone is pointing to their wife. Or,
yeah, you know, but you can sense it. And I was surprised, rather than just going down and saying, would you help me? Because another point was if the first person refuses, have you noticed the next person refuses that? Because
that's
now know they can.
Thing. Bad thing.
They can refuse.
Sure. So once you get the no, then
if somebody says to me no, I usually don't respond to it and move to the person right next to you. And I say, no, come and help me. And I get the person right next to them. Mm-hmm. So the audience doesn't perceive that somebody has said no.
Reluctant.
Of course, if they say no as well, then we're in it. But it's like a second chance.
Right. Well, I remember when I was working on Crystal Cruise Line, I was looking for some volunteers beforehand, do a little bit of pre-show, and you know, and then later said, can I bring you up on stage? And I was getting just no after no. In this case, I was approaching them one at a time as they were coming to the theater. It wasn't like there was a group of whatever, and it was difficult. And so then I started.
They don't know what they're signing up to. That's what it is.
I think that's true, and that's why I think it's important to do a little bit of close up or something, or for them to know your personality. You know, if you're doing pre-show, that's one thing, but if you're going to be asking, saying, where they don't know you and say, I'm going to want you to come up a little bit later, you're right. It's going to be hard to solicit their cooperation, particularly, but you're right, they don't know what they're signing up for. But if you're doing, like in a corporate environment, I like to do some close-up and kind of walk around a little bit, you know, so this way they know me whenever I ask for them to come up on stage, then they're going to say, yeah, he's a good guy. He's not going to make fun of me. And, you know, that's going to work out, you know, fine then too. And one of the ideas, going back to Nathan Komar, said he had suggested, that was Nick LaCapo's idea, I think, actually, that like with a linking ring, finger ring routine, that you ask people who have finger rings if they will remove them, hold them in the palm of their hand, so when I come around, I don't have, they don't have to take time to pull them off, and you know who is volunteering because they've already got their hand out with a ring in it.
It's a, and it's the biggest problem with that trick is trying to the time it takes to get them.
Right. So if you ask beforehand.
Yeah, that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, just a neat little tip. I don't get to talk with, you know, many illusionists. It seems like a lot of close-up guys. There are very few people who are doing illusions and everything. And so I know we had Dan Summers, our mutual
friend.
Yeah,
Dan was here yesterday and the day before.
He was here last night. And I know that he's been working with you on some stuff then as well. Who bills a lot of your illusions?
Well, Daniel does a fantastic job with any of that. And also we have in the UK, Adam Topham. From a company called Illusion Craft. He is fantastic, and he can hold his head up with the best of them. Mm-hmm. He builds all metal construction, and he built things like my split screens illusion, which you saw at the start with the television sets on it.
Very original idea.
Yeah, that's a neat thing, and that's and it's a fun way to start the show. And
can
it's
you
nice
explain
and,
that? You want
yeah,
to?
It's like for you could probably see it online if you just Google Jamie Allen split screens. You'll be able to find it because I've done it a couple of times on television. So those clips are online on Vimeo on because I did it on Grand Cabaret du Monde, the French show, and I did it on ITV. And it's a thing with four television sets that slide around. It's based around the zigzag.
Right.
That was the thought process behind it, but it's with televisions. And the lady goes in and the TV slide in front. She appears on the televisions and the TV slide away and she's vanished into the TV sets. And then she changes dress, and then she comes back, and then there's another person appears as a kid.
I think one of the most brilliant things in that, that I have to compliment you on, you probably get this all the time from other magicians who see that as well, is a costume change. It makes sense for the first time that people can actually know that there was a change. So many times that a volunteer assistant gets into something, you know, in one black and they come out in white or whatever kind of a change, and it goes right past them. Someone says, hey, did you notice that? And, but here where you see the lady on the screen, on the TV screens, and she's in red, and you tap the screen, and suddenly it becomes white. It's like, wow. And then when they open it, then it makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, she was red, wasn't she?
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
It was all of these things, some of them are like accidental innovations that come up along the way. Like, did you see the projection mapping on the water tank?
Yes, and explain about that. I think that is brilliant also. And the way that Natalie keeps bringing up and down the curtain and also, the projection, particularly with the time, so this way you can see the second countdown kind of thing.
Yeah, so we have, that was purely by accident. We were designing, we were going to do some projection mapping on, I mean, it occurs to a show where you're doing digital magic, a lot of it's going to be display. A lot of it's going to be visuals that are going to have some form of video.
Right.
And whether that be on an iPad or an LED wall or projector. So you find yourself looking at an illusion going, I wonder if we can put any video into this somehow.
Right.
You know, that's one of the few things tangents we often go down. And with that curtain on the tank, we said, well, obviously this is a prime place we can project onto this curtain. And we were looking at projecting a whole lot of just like clocks and some Houdini visuals and just some things to make it entertaining, really, and keep it moving. And we projection mapped onto the tank because we realized we needed to provide lighting from the front that didn't interfere with the projection. So the answer to that was to actually light myself and the tank with the projector, to put virtual spotlights on the projector to light the areas.
So when you're seeing that part of Houdini's poster, iconic poster with that monster kind of pushing through that, but the rest of that underneath the tank, that's actually a silhouette of you. I mean, that's a light from behind. We're actually seeing you in there, or is
you
that
can see me at times, and then you cut. And then you, so it combines it with the live action. But then we found when we dropped a curtain, we actually had mapped the very edges of the tank, the frame of the tank, with the projector when we were doing our tests.
Right.
And then I said to Tommy, I must shout out to Tommy Bond, who's my right hand, and he designs and does all the stuff with me. He's my sort of partner in this. He's not on stage, but he does everything technical. And Tommy and I were sitting in the warehouse, and we'd mapped the tank. And I said, I'll just drop the curtain. And I went and pulled the curtain. It dropped down, and it looked like the tank was still there.
Yeah.
It was because the lines just transferred from there to the curtain. And we both went, whoa, that's something.
Yeah.
and that's how it came to be.
Uh-huh.
Is that we realized it was
moment of inspiration there.
Yeah, a moment of just a hallelujah moment when we went. That's it, and that has become one of my favorite things now to do. And also, there's a great perception, a retention of vision, mm-hmm. with seeing it on the curtain. And seeing it when the curtain's lifted and down.
Right, because you do that several times. I mean, you lift it up, it's still inside there and everything. Yeah. And then when that you do the change, I mean, it is instantaneous.
Yeah, and it makes it seem instantaneous as well now. And in a similar way to looking back at what's gone before us, in the way that the painting on the front of the Zigzag Lady made us believe she was in three pieces.
That's right.
And it's no different what we've done with video mapping on the tank. We're making them feel that they can see me till the last possible
second.
That's
a good point. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Robert Harbin had that all together. I mean,
he had it all together. Yeah, he nailed that. He absolutely mm-hmm. nailed that. And as we mentioned it in the show,
yeah,
you know, he changed it.
And also, then, like the videos that you talk about, some of the history, like of the sawing, for an example, leading up to the
it's like a little mini documentary while I change.
Exactly. So that is a good idea. So you do have some time actually for a moment to make that change or those changes. But then also to educate the audience in kind of a short 60, 90 second type of thing for a short attention span for everybody to kind of say, okay, well, I got the idea of where this came from. And I've heard about this. Now they're actually getting some real information.
Well, it's also educating the audience on, you know, we would buy something like this. We're talking here about Clearly Impossible, which is mm-hmm. what I have, is a marketed illusion mm-hmm. that Daniel Summers built, and he does a fantastic job of it. And I think that Clearly Impossible is the best version of Soaring in Half out mm-hmm. there, but I don't think the audience perceive it to be any different if you don't explain it to them. We know the boxes are glass, but I don't mm-hmm. think the audience really notice whether they're glass or not. Do they know if that's just the way it's done now?
Right.
But I think that by educating the audience on, you know, what it was and how impossible it would be were it glass.
But it was big and bulky and then got smaller and smaller to where it is now clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to the point now, could it be possible? And I think that seems to really resonate with the audience. And people do come up to me and mention it now.
Wow.
Which they didn't. They never used to, because I used to just do it.
Right. Right.
We didn't do it here with the laser because there's an issue if we use too much haze here in the hobby center with the fire regulations and things.
And
we have to pay a few $100 a day otherwise for have a fire marshal sat here just for the sake of haze. So mm-hmm. we usually have lasers in the show. We do laser manipulation, but there's no lasers in the show this year. And that's the reason. It's just purely a cost one. But we normally have a laser that's rigged in the center of our lighting rig that burns down onto the Soaring in Half and burns fire through the box when we push it through it to cut it, which is a nice moment, nice special effect, which was the thing that gave us the license to say, oh, this will make it fit into the theme of our show. Because I don't want to do every trick with tech and every trick with phones, because it would just get boring and be like a TED talk or a lecture, and it would not be entertaining.
I've thought about that, the kind of the ebb and flow and the different ways that you would carry this along, so that there are some pieces of classic magic, there are pieces of sleight of hand as well as
And they all have
stuff.
To be justified in some way to the theme of the show. So in the case of the thing we do with the zigzag, with the the little box that we call flat Nat, because Nat goes in it, where the box is compressed, and we theme it around the zigzag. And I'm saying that iMagician is not just about magic with technology. It's about trying to find a new way to look at an age-old art form and a way that you, the audience, can perceive the difference, even if it's just perceived. But because ultimately, it's all our job is just to construct an entertaining magic show.
Exactly.
And try and find the pace and the flow to it.
But to make it mysterious, you got to, you know, create mystery.
It's absolutely.
You know, along the way then as well. And I thought it was interesting that you mentioned there last evening about how that it's difficult to try to keep up with technology because
it
moves at such a rapid pace, obviously, and a lot of times once the people figure out how that it's done, then you have to be moving on beyond
I'm trying
that.
To wait for things to fall into their consciousness. You know, now this augmented reality is, although it's been around for ages actually, it's just starting really to fall into people's consciousness. But amazingly, I can say to the audience, who's heard of augmented reality? Hardly anybody says that they have. Then if I say, but have you ever played with one of those Snapchat filters or Facebook filters?
Yeah, like Pokemon, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, that's augmented reality. Have you ever looked at this? This is augmented reality. And I have to tell them what it is to try and... Because otherwise, They're just going to say it's a video effect.
Well, then perhaps you could say the difference between VR and AR, you know, the virtual reality. And so this way, you know it, you're kind of educating them as well.
Yeah.
Because they still may confuse that. Say, oh, yeah, that when you put those glasses on, or, no, not exactly. You know, that's VR and you're actually in a room or whatever. You know, you're and virtual reality is you creating a virtual world as opposed to a real world where that something is projected within the real world.
Yeah,
as
totally.
An augment. In other words, if you can quickly maybe differentiate between the two of those.
Yeah, that's
being
a good, it's a good point, actually.
You know, over there. But so the things that you're doing, again, are, you know, cutting edge, you know, certainly. That's why I think that you're separated from anybody else. And you've been doing the iAct since about 2012-ish?
Yeah. Well, I started – so my first delve into tech magic was when I was 17. And that was when I was doing – I did a trick with a television set. Mm-hmm. And I became known as the guy with the TV set. And that was okay with me because if they can't remember your name, at least they remember something that I did.
Right.
And then the TV got too bulky and I was trying to fly it around and I had to drop it for a while.
That was before flat screen TVs and all that.
It was before that. Yeah, it was when it was a big tube TV. Uh-huh. And I want to mention here Marco Tempest because I would never have got into technology if it weren't for the inspiration of
Marco
Tempest.
He's the real tech guy.
Yeah, he is phenomenal. But I mean, he is doing actual magical tech.
Yeah.
I mean, he is... You know, I'm just doing a show that is themed around technology, that is a modern magic show that shows them some interesting ideas of how tech can be in magic and how the two can work together. But it's a theatrical experience. And the only thing that differentiates me is that I've got the only theatre show that's a full evening show that is themed around this. But I mean, look at Marco. I mean, that was some of the things he's done has been absolutely incredible. And, you know, so I owe a great debt of gratitude to him. And I think anybody that does tech magic should see him as a, you know, a real founding performer.
Yeah, and he still continues to.
He still does. Yeah. And I hope he continues to amaze us all. He was incredible. So I always feel like I don't want to sit here and take credit as if I've created something. I stumbled into something that I was interested. I've always been I've been very interested in tech. You know, I'm a very techie kind of guy anyway. So it was a natural thing for me to move into it. And I was inspired by seeing Marco, but I've tried to move into my own areas and I don't cross over with anybody now. And I think that more people are moving into this field, but I feel we have to, as a community, we have to
embrace
things that are popular with everybody else, just in the same way we do magic with objects they understand. Well, everybody's got a phone in their pocket. Every magician should do at least one trick with a phone.
I've got a couple as well, you know, that you can always do. It has to have something that's going to be very strong. And there are a couple of great things out there that thing I recommend is Digital Force Bag.
Yeah,
I think,
it's
Nick
great.
Einhorn? Yeah.
It's great. It's great.
Inject is another one by Rostami.
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I use like one app in the show, but most of the stuff. We've got a couple of custom apps. In fact, we didn't do the iPads last night.
Tell me about that. That was what I was going to. I'm glad you mentioned that because, you said that we were low on batteries life or something. I'd love
to
see.
No, we had just one of them malfunctioned. We have a spare, but we didn't have time to change it.
Well, explain the effect. I'd like to know what.
So I did it on Penn & Teller on Fool Us.
Okay.
If you wanted to check it out.
I'll add that onto the blog for people.
Yeah, but it's a routine with four iPads that work together. But it's rather than a routine that's like video multi-screen, it'd be very easy to create a routine that's more things flashing around between the screens. I've got to be honest, when I worked on the technology, that was originally kind of my intention.
Uh-huh.
And then I needed something to put it on. And at the time, my first routine, I used an easel, an artist's easel. Mm-hmm. I found an easel. And I looked at it and said, this looks like a window, the picture. It looks like a painting. And where the four iPads sit in the four frames. And it was on an easel. And that was when I decided to make it more artistic. And I made the music very slow. And it's all about the four seasons. So the iPads transition from a single light that turns into the sun that grows. And then the flowers grow on the iPads. And then I pluck the petals off. And it starts to turn to autumn. And the leaves go brown. And I throw leaves in the air. And they all float down around the iPads. And then I create water. And the water pours from the iPad. And that turns into snow in my hand. And the snow I pour, and it appears on the screen. And then it's snowing in the scene, and then from the snow comes the one little light, which is like this sparkle of spring, and it flies around the iPads, moves around until it grows back into the sun, and the single flower grows, and I pull the flower out of the iPads, and it's like the four seasons, and it flows all the way through from spring back to spring.
Right.
And I'm not sure that is, like a lot of art, I'm not sure how clear that is to the audience sometimes, but I think they get it for the most part.
Right.
But to me, it has a very clear narrative.
Sure.
And
it sounds like it from your description.
Yeah, certainly. I'm particularly proud of that. And if you watch it again now, you can see it. Mm-hmm. You know, but sometimes when you watch it, you just see it as a nice visual piece of entertainment, which is exactly what it should be.
But now
be. You
know the background about
what Yeah, you're... but that was my intention.
I always like to talk to an artist about that, you know, and I'm talking about illustrative art, you know, whether it's a sculpture or a painting or whatever it is, to kind of see, you know, what is it what you were thinking when you were trying to paint this? What was your conception?
Yeah.
You know, because they may have a completely different idea. You know, that's why the people just sit and stare at something. You know, it means something to me, but not necessarily the same to you. You
know? So I'm sat on a couple of pieces of tech at the moment that I've got something working with that was the same with the iPads, where I had the system to make this multi-screen work. I'd found out how I was going to do it, and now I was just sat there staring at these things going, mm-hmm. But now how do I present this? And I'm doing this again with a couple of things now that I know are, I know there's something there, and I'm just waiting for the inspiration, but it just hits you at the most unlikely places. Mm-hmm. And we're always working on something new.
I know that there are other people who are doing iPad things. I'm trying to think of the fellow that's over in Sweden, or is it, or something that I've seen.
Oh, you're probably going to say
I think he was a magical
Simon Pirro from Germany.
Yes, I think that's him.
Yeah, yes. Simon's a really nice guy. I met him on a couple mm-hmm. of occasions, and he's great because he's made himself the iPad guy.
Yes.
And that's great. He has a very clear brand, mm-hmm. And he'll work, you know, for a long time like that, you know,
right.
And he's very innovative as well.
Right.
And again, you know, I think, you know, we're pretty much friends, most of us in this community. There's Keelan Lacer as well is the mm-hmm. other guy. And that's pretty much it.
Locally, Paul Gertner does, you know, here in the U.S. He does something with an iPad. They puts this thing over his face.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
In my radar, I know it's like Marco. And then you've got Keelan, who does corporate shows and things, some real clever stuff. Simon, who does a lot of corporate. I don't really do so much corporate. I made a decision years ago to say I'm going to be just do stage magic. That's all I want to do. I don't do close-up magic, and I won't do anything else.
You're focused.
I'm really focused on it. And I've spent theater shows in particular. I've spent a considerable amount of money and time to try and get this to where I mean, it's my real passion, and I love it. I mean, I love it so much. Mm-hmm. And my passion has always been live theater.
Yeah.
And I do TV in the UK, but I have to do TV to sell some tickets, but I'm not really passionate about the TV.
Right.
And I'll do TV. Like, I'm not snubbing any of that. I'll go,
but the reason
do it.
The reason you've used that is just to promote yourself and your brand, to get people to put butts in the seats, basically.
Yeah, I just want to do the live show.
Sure.
I love the theatre.
And
I always will. And it's the best way for magic to be seen, particularly now in the internet age. Everything's just exposed right. instantly online. You can keep secrets in a theatre. They can come and watch it. You can tell them not to film it with their phones. They can leave. They can remember it. And it's the last stand. You know, the live magic. And ultimately, the internet and technology will destroy TV magic. I'm sure of that. Mm. You know, because now don't think people don't know that there's so many effects and cuts and stuff on TV. And, you know, some people, you know, are really, really good with it. Yeah. And I know that's what we have to do because they can instantly rewind it. So I know there's no obvious answer to it. But I think the one thing I'm sure of is that ultimately it will survive in live environments, you know, where people watch it.
No, I think it's important that that you're right, that we do try to protect magic, but we by doing a good job with it and not exposing it.
Yeah, yeah, and just you know, and I find that people react really well to what we're doing because they can hopefully sense my own passion for mm-hmm. it. And I think that that's what they say to me mostly after the show is like, we just know how much you loved it.
Right.
And I think that spreads onto the audience. Like,
I think that's the best magicians, you know, are those who you can feel their effervescence. You can feel their personality.
Yeah.
Like, I'm having a great time up here. I hope you guys can join me on the ride.
Yeah, exactly.
This is so much fun.
Exactly.
You know?
And the same with anybody. I mean, somebody can come and talk about welding, and if they're passionate enough about it,
sure. It's
you
like
know,
you get interested in it
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Well, just as we were talking about it over drinks last beer last night that
was a good beer.
It wasn't
yeah.
Where than most people say, you know, sit back, relax, enjoy the magic of whoever. Mm. And I would say that really what you should be saying is, you know, sit up on the edge of your seats because that's where you're going to spend the rest of the night. So as you enjoy the magic of,
yeah.
You know, because you want people to be excited rather than sitting back and relaxing and saying, oh yeah, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Polite
yeah.
applause.
Yeah. Go
you
on. Entertain me, magic boy.
Exactly. Dance monkey. So
yeah.
You want people to be on the edge of their seats the whole time. It's like, wow, how's he doing that? What is happening?
Yeah.
You know? So get ready, be prepared, get on the edge of your seat, you know.
Yeah, it's well, it's certainly been a great pleasure coming to Houston, you know, and it was great seeing Dan and seeing, and everyone, thank you for being
sure.
so welcoming last night and bringing all those people together. That was a really nice thing, and it was probably the nicest night we've had since we've been here, because it gets pretty stressful bringing a show of this size. And I'm not saying that I have a big show, but it's quite a lot of equipment. And
is it just one semi or two, or what have you got?
We came in 154 foot, but we actually don't, we can cram it right down into like most of it will fit into a 22 foot shipping container this show. Mm-hmm. But when we do all of the illusions, we need we can fit in one semi.
Right. Well, if you get then on the road, then you're going to be going into different size theaters. And so this way you can expand or contract however that you wish.
Yeah, we
so
have the small shot back and the big stuff at the end.
Right.
And that's when we tour with our own truck then. So we'd have to unload and load all the time. But I mean, certain things I always do, like the water, I always do. But I mean, that's been built in such a way as it can be done most mm-hmm. anywhere, even though it's still pretty spectacular.
You don't travel with water, obviously, that you just...
We don't. We use it. No, we use the local water.
Okay. I wondered about that last evening, because you were saying there's a ton of water in here. Not that point. It took a long time to fill that up.
Yeah. Do you know it takes about 12, 15 minutes with the hoses we
have. Is that right? Yeah,
to fill it up. Because we empty every show. It's been emptied now, really? And it'll be full again for the evening show.
Huh. So you don't put any extra chlorine or do anything to it? It's basically
there's chlorine in the water here in Houston, so it's fine. But no, we sometimes add something. There are venues where it's been very difficult to fill it and empty it, so we have kept the water in there. Mm-hmm. But I don't like to leave a tank of water on stage with our electronics overnight when nobody's here.
Good point.
Because I don't know, I mean, it's not going to break, but, still.
Yeah, better be safe than sorry, certainly like that. And so what is your long term? What are you thinking about? What do you want to do?
I'd like to settle down in a little room in a resident situation. I mean, we still have a few big gigs we're planning to do, but I'd like to create something that is a big show, but in an intimate space. Mm-hmm. I think that that big moments as well as small moments, but you can sit. Say we have a room that's 200-250 seats. That's still big enough to do big magic in.
Right.
It becomes overwhelming when you bring on something like the water tank and you can get it to be 6 feet away from the front row. They really feel a part of that.
They do.
And it's fantastic, a fantastic way. And I'll say that Copperfield does a good job of this. In Vegas, he's bringing the illusions right down to the front of the stage. I mean, mm-hmm. if you're in the front row, you mm-hmm. feel like you could reach up and grab the wheel.
Right. Same thing like Siegfried and Roy used to have that runway,
yeah,
they'd
so
make
powerful.
An elephant vanish
they
right there.
It, even in the big room, they've got to get it right in amongst the people. When you bring it behind the proscenium, anytime you can break the proscenium arch, I think, and get it forward, I think that makes a big difference.
Well, Franz Ferrari told me that one time, too. He was saying that he was doing his show over Macau a few years ago, but what the size of the theater was, I want to say it was 150, and he's doing these huge illusions, And he was saying that he liked it because he can see the expressions in people's eyes, because when he was doing large stadiums of 120,000 people or whatever, he said everybody can see it because they're large, certainly. But he said a lot of times when I was rehearsing beforehand, and I would just have the people who were going to be, the guards and, ticket seller, whoever, they'd watch and they'd be in the first few rows. And he said I could see their expressions and they enjoyed the show. And I started thinking perhaps I could still do these large illusions to a much smaller group. And so that's why, he started doing the Macau.
Yeah, that looked like an incredible venue. I never got to go.
No, that closed. And since now, I think just recently we opened another one in China someplace. I'm not sure.
Is it a similar format, I think?
I think so. Who I was just talking with recently? Was it Rocco or somebody, I think, was going over to work with him for a few months. Anyhow.
Yeah, I met Hans. I met
Franz.
Franz once. I'm sorry, Hans. I'm going to see Hans.
You're
going
to see Hans Klock.
Yeah, I'm going to see him next week.
I've not yet seen his show, but people tell me that if I was going to be a magician, that's the guy I'd want to be, because he just has that good look.
He's brilliant. He's always been my guilty pleasure, Hans Klock. He was the best. I mean, it's very easy to see him on 3 minutes on TV and make a decision whether, that's your style or not. But I guarantee anybody that watches him live, you cannot help but love this man.
Yeah, and he's working in Vegas now, isn't he?
Okay. He's in Vegas now at the Excalibur.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm going to go and see the show next week, which I'm excited. We're going to take 9 days off in Vegas. We've got a couple of meetings, but apart from that, we're going to spend our time just to, finally relax. I feel like I haven't stopped all year.
Here right now, by the way, when this is being recorded on December 29th, so it'll be broadcast sometime in the future. So
yeah,
you kind of have a sense of what the timing is going to be on this. And so, having a nice venue where you can actually settle down and actually do a show that you don't have to worry about, packing up and moving around or everything, that I think would be very nice.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, before we close, that since the name of my podcast is called the Magic Word Podcast, I always like to ask my guest, what is it that is your passion? What is it that moves you? You know, what is your magic word or phrase?
Oh, that moves me.
Yeah, when you get up in the morning, what is it that challenges you, or, you know?
Well, the thing is, I mean, if I could try and narrow it down to one word.
It could be a phrase.
For me, it's something that my friend Andrew O'Connor used to say, that is the work is the reward.
Hmm.
You know, and I'm driven not by money, and I'm not driven by, I mean, I need to make some money so that we can do the show.
Of course.
But I've never been driven by that success or ego. I've always wanted just to do good work. And so I think that for me, I'm sure this has come up many times, but it would have to just be passion.
Mm-hmm.
It would have to be, because I live it, breathe it, and much to the detriment of people around me, as I'm sure any of us in magic have a long-suffering family and
family
that put up with it. If you're really trying to do something new, mm-hmm. you know, you have to be so obsessive about it. And you don't have to be, but you just are. And I don't think about anything else. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a real love affair.
It's not just our art. I know that people who are dancers trying to get on Broadway and singers, people who are actors, you know, in Hollywood or whomever, that this is their passion. They're going to continue to do whatever. And there was a film a while back on The Magicians, I can't recall, but it had John Armstrong and had four different people who were in that. And basically...
Oh, that was The Magicians, wasn't it? That documentary.
Yes. Magicians something.
No, it was the one that was the documentary with John Armstrong had the... one of them that met an untimely end.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyhow, the point was that they, and I talked with the documentarian, the filmmaker, about this on a podcast, and they were saying that the point was to show how that they do have a passion, and I don't care. I'll live in a garage, you know. I'll eat cat food, or, you know, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And that this is more important than a relationship with a wife or having a family or, you know, food. You know, I just love this. You know, I like what I'm doing. And so.
Well, it's it's what defines us. Mm-hmm. And it's everything that we are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that that's a very special thing. People could look at it as a disability in a way, but it's actually really, we're very, very lucky to have found something, all of us, that we love this much, because most people don't ever find something they're that passionate about.
No, that's true.
We're incredibly fortunate. So much so that we would want to sit here and just talk about it.
And I have for hours, which is, if you go back in the archives, obviously.
Yeah, I will be doing now. I've downloaded so many of yours for the plane.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I'm glad that you enjoy this. And I also thank you very much for your time then, Jamie.
It's been great. No, thank you, Scott. It's a pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
I'm glad you had a chance to come through Houston. We had a chance then to sit and chat, and look forward to doing this again sometime in the future.
Yeah, thanks, Scott.
You bet. And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Jamie Allen. This is Scotty out. Well, that was fun and educational as well. So thank you very much, Jamie. I appreciate the time that you gave me in order to sit down and to talk a little bit. I know that we were a little bit rushed because he was just, and again, we got to talk in his dressing room prior to his afternoon matinee. And so anyhow, we had a great time. And so I hope that you enjoyed that as well. And also that if you get an opportunity to see his show someplace, when it happens to be traveling anywhere near you, be sure to go see Jamie Allen, the Eye Magician. Really good. Also, I mentioned earlier about people who are building things, and Dan Summers is one of the people who build some of his illusions, as well as illusions for other magicians then as well. But Jamie also has some of his illusions that are for sale, that are his ideas that Daniel and others have created for him. And so if you are interested, that if you'll just go to his Facebook page, that's Jamie Allen's Facebook page, I'm sure that he has things posted there that will give you some information and some videos on some of the illusions that he's got available for sale. Well, hey, again, thank you guys very much for listening, and also for subscribing to the Pod Letter. And if you don't, be sure to do that, so this way that you keep up to date each week as to what's happening and who's going to be on and who's coming up next week. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to be passionate and be driven by your work. This is Scotty out.